I think we can all certainly say amen to the words of that hymn. And now we turn our attention to the study of Samson, and our brother Stephen Robinson will be leading the study tonight.
Good evening. As mentioned, we're going to be looking at the life of Samson this evening. And when we look at his life, the question we inevitably come to is, how do we understand this man? The record says he judged Israel for 20 years, but there are so many negative things that are written about him that you wonder how it is that he's called a judge. He tried to marry outside the truth. He slept with a prostitute. He lived with a woman who wasn't his wife. He was supposed to be a Nazarite, but he doesn't seem to be very good at keeping his vow. He was given the Spirit of God and great strength, but it doesn't seem he always used it wisely. How is this man called a judge? Would you call this man a judge? You know, from the information we're given in Judges, if I just read it, I think I would be tempted to write Samson off. And yet, in the New Testament, we're given another piece of information about him. We're all pretty familiar with the ideas of halls of fame. In Cooperstown, there's the Baseball Hall of Fame. In Springfield, Massachusetts, there's the Basketball Hall of Fame. In Toronto, Ontario, there's the Hockey Hall of Fame. And in Hebrews 11, we have God's Hall of Fame. We have a record of the great men in the Old Testament, the men of faith. We have people like Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We have great leaders like David and Moses. And in Hebrews 11, verse 32, we read, "And what shall I more say? For the time would fail me to tell thee of Gideon, and of Barak, and of Samson, and of Jephthah, of David, also in Samuel, and of the prophets." And we have here listed in Hebrews chapter 11, the name of Samson, alongside all these other great men of faith. And this piece of information, I think, forces us to take a step backwards when we read about the life of Samson and to look carefully, because there obviously was some reason why God included Samson in Hebrews chapter 11. How do we understand Samson? What was he like? What was he like as a person? Well, the name Samson means brilliant sunlight. And I think that's the type of person he was. There are some people that when they walk into a room, it lights up. There are some people who just seem to be larger than life, and I think Samson was like this. Wherever he went, people were noticing him. People were looking at him. Amazing things happened wherever Samson was, and this attracted people to him. He got a lot of attention. But Samson was also a person who, it seems, was quick with a joke, a laugh, or a riddle. He made friends very easy, almost too easy. Sometimes the friends he made, he shouldn't have been friends with. He was passionate about the things that he did, and sometimes this was for good, and sometimes this was not for good. How do we look at the life of Samson? Well, at the very beginning of his life, in Judges chapter 13, we're given a verse that I think typifies his entire life. In Judges 13, and at verse 25, we read, "And the Spirit of the Lord began to move him at times in the camp of Dan between Zorah and Eshtaol." If you look up Zorah, it means a hornet. If you look up Eshtaol, it means to be entreated. At times, God's Spirit was the overriding influence in Samson's life, and he went out like a hornet, and he stung the Philistines. And at other times, Samson was entreated by the Philistines. Seems at one moment Samson is winning a great victory for God, and the next he's falling down, and he's being entreated by the world around him. Notice also this verse says, "in the camp of Dan." Why was Dan a camp? Well, it's because they hadn't taken their inheritance. Why hadn't they taken their inheritance? God had given them the land. Well, it's because they didn't have enough courage or faith to follow what their God had said and to take the land he'd given them. And so Dan was still living in a camp, they were still living an unsettled existence. I think that the fact that Dan was a camp was a motivating factor for Samson when he headed down to Timnath. I think he wondered why it was that they couldn't take the land that was theirs, why it was that they didn't have enough courage to throw these Philistines out. I think this is what Samson was thinking about when he headed down to Timnath. If you look at the word Timnath, you find it means a portion or an inheritance. I think that's what Samson was thinking about. This land is our land. It's our portion. It's our inheritance. Judges 19:43, you can read that Timnath was supposed to be a city of the tribe of Dan. But instead of being occupied by the Danites, it was occupied by the Philistines. And so I think Samson went down to Timnath to see what was going on, why it was that they couldn't throw these Philistines out. I think he went down with good intentions. But it's funny how life is. Sometimes we can have the best of intentions, but then we get distracted. The moment my daughter Natalie has just learned how to crawl, and this has opened up her world, because suddenly she can go places she wants to go and get things that she wants to get. But it's kind of interesting to watch her, because she'll see a toy, and she'll make a beeline for this toy, but then she'll stop and notice a leaf off to the side and decide, whoa, wait a second, I think I'd rather go for this leaf. And so she'll head off toward this leaf, but then she'll notice a piece of paper, and she'll stop and head off towards this piece of paper and completely forget about the toy she was originally going for. And it's funny to watch, but it can be frustrating, especially if you want her to get the toy rather than the leaf or the piece of paper. I think we must frustrate God at times because we can be so easily distracted. We can start out with the best of intentions of living the truth, and then along the way we somehow get distracted. Somebody says something comes into our life, and suddenly the truth isn't in the forefront of how we are living. This must be frustrating for God, because we seem to do this all the time. And this is what happened to Samson. He went down to Timnath, I think, with the idea of serving his God. But when he got there, he became distracted. Because you see, Samson had a problem. He had a problem with his eyes. He couldn't help noticing that in Timnath there was an awful lot of very beautiful Philistine women. And he was attracted to them. And he fell in love with one of them. And instead of stinging the Philistines, he found himself to be entreated by them. We find he was entreated by the Philistines. And he went down to marry this girl. But if we look at the account, we find out that God bails Samson out in this incident. God works in the situation, and he works to break up this relationship, to set Samson straight, to refocus on him on what he's supposed to be doing in his life. And God shows Samson what this girl is really like, what the Philistines are like, and shows Samson that this isn't what he should be about. He shouldn't be entangling himself in the Philistines. He should be destroying them. Samson had a problem with his eyes and with beautiful women, and in his life we will find three incidents where this is a problem. In the first two incidents, Samson escapes relatively unscathed. But there's a saying that three strikes and you're out, and in the third incident, Samson ran into a woman that was more than a match for him, and his God stopped bailing him out. All of us have problems, and all of us have weaknesses. All of us have lessons that we need to learn. And often we're given multiple opportunities to learn our lesson. God can be very patient with us at times. But there comes a time when we need to have learned that lesson, and we need to have moved on. And if we haven't, God may take drastic action to help us overcome some weakness that we have. And this is what happened in Samson's life. And we can look down at Samson and say, well, look at that. He had so many opportunities. He had the Spirit of God and he fell down. We can look at his failures, but I don't think we should look down on Samson for his failures, because we've been given these things to learn from. to learn from and apply in our lives. I think if we are honest, we can all point to some things in our life, some weaknesses, some lessons that took us an awful long time to learn, or that we still haven't learned. We may have been given many more strikes than Samson. It may be that God is being very patient with us. And there's a warning in the life of Samson that we need to learn our lesson. We need to overcome our weaknesses while we have opportunity. Because if we don't, God may take drastic action to help us to overcome, just like he did with Samson. So back to Judges 14. Samson, he decided to marry this girl, and he's heading down to Timnath for the second time. And if you read verse 5, it says, "Then went Samson down and his father and his mother to Timnath, and came to the vineyards of Timnath, and behold, a young lion roared against him. And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and he rent him as he would have rent a kid, and he had nothing in his hand. But he told not his father or his mother what he had done." I think there's a lesson here. There was a lesson here for Samson. Now, what are vineyards a symbol of in the Bible? Because we're told this happened when he reached the vineyards of Timnath. Well, in the Bible, the vineyard is often used as a symbol of inheritance, of being in a land for a long time, of the good things of life. Turn with me, for instance, to Psalm 80, verse, starting at verse 12. Here a vineyard is used to represent Israel and the land that they inherited. Psalm 80, verse 12, "Why hast thou then broken down her hedges so that all they which pass by the way do pluck her? The boar out of the wood doth waste it, and the wild beast of the field doth devour it. Return, we beseech thee, O God of hosts, look down from heaven and behold and visit this vine and the vineyard which thy right hand hath planted and the branch that thou madest strong for thyself." We have the vineyard representing the land and the people that God had chosen. It was their inheritance. Look also what had been promised to Israel concerning vineyards and lands. Deuteronomy chapter 6. When Israel was coming into this land, this is what God said to them about this land. Deuteronomy 6 and verse 10. "And it shall be when the Lord thy God shall have brought thee into the land which he sware unto thy fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob, to give thee great and goodly cities which thou buildest not, and houses full of all good things which thou fillest not, and wells digged which thou diggest not, vineyards and olive trees which thou plantest not, when thou shalt have eaten to be full, then beware lest thou forget the Lord which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage." Samson was in this vineyard that was owned by the Philistines, a vineyard that should have been owned by the Danites. It was part of Israel's inheritance. God had said, "I will give you these things." And in this vineyard, Samson meets a lion. And he kills this lion. It's interesting, if you look at this word lion, there are two Hebrew words which are used to describe this lion. Two Hebrew words that both mean lion. The first Hebrew word is found 32 times in the Bible, and 30 of those times it's translated lion or young lion. And the second word for lion used is always translated lion. We're told very clearly that this was a lion, but not just any lion, it was a young lion. Now if you look in the Old Testament, you will find that there were two tribes in Israel which are described as young lions or lion's whelps. Can you guess which ones? First, I think it's probably pretty obvious. We're all pretty familiar with Judah being described as the lion of the tribe of Judah. We have an example of this in Genesis 49. In the prophecy given by Jacob. Genesis 49, and at verse 9 we read, "Judah is a lion's whelp from the prey, my son. Thou art gone up. He stooped down, he couched as a lion." Judah is described as a lion, as the lion's whelp. There was one other tribe that was also described as a lion. Guess what tribe that was? It was Dan. Look at Deuteronomy 33. And at verse 22. Deuteronomy 33, verse 22 reads, "And of Dan he said, Dan is a lion's whelp. He shall leap from Bashan." We have two tribes that are described as lion's whelps. It's young lions. It's children of lions. Samson finds himself in this vineyard and he looks down at this lion and he sees a dead lion. And if he looked around, he would have seen two dead tribes, because Dan was too weak to take their inheritance. The tribe of Dan was dead. They were doing nothing. They were sitting back and letting the Philistines walk all over them. But look at the tribe of Judah. What was Judah doing? Look at the next chapter, Judges 15, verse 9 to 11. "Then the Philistines went up and pitched in Judah and spread themselves in Lehi. And the men of Judah said, 'Why are ye come up against us?' And they answered, 'To bind Samson are we come up, to do unto him as he hath done to us.' Then 3,000 men of Judah went to the top of the rock Etam." Did they come to protect Samson? No. "And they said to Samson, 'Knowest thou not that the Philistines are rulers over us? What is this that thou hast done unto us?'" The tribe of Judah was dead as well. When Samson looked at that lion, he saw a dead lion, and the tribes he was working with were dead as well. There's another way Samson could have looked at that lion. Because you see, he was standing in a vineyard that should have been the inheritance of Israel, and there was a lion, and this lion roared against him. And this lion can also represent the Philistines. We have almost the exact same phrase as this lion roaring against him in chapter 15, verse 14. It says there, "And when he came into Lehi, the Philistines shouted against him, and the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him." In this first instance in chapter 14, it's a lion that roars against him, and the Spirit of God comes mightily upon him. Chapter 15 is the actual Philistines who roar against him, and the Spirit of God comes mightily upon him. The Philistines were in Israel's inheritance, and they were lying, roaring against Israel. They were beasts that were trampling Israel's vineyard. And the Philistine lion was roaring against Samson, and Samson found that the Spirit of God came upon him, and he ripped the lion into pieces. He destroyed the lion. And I think if we look at this incident in chapter 14, it seems that Samson was a little bit puzzled about what had happened. He's walking along and suddenly this lion jumps at him out of nowhere, and almost without thinking, without time to react, the Spirit of God comes upon him and he kills this lion, and he looks down and he realizes he doesn't have a weapon in his hand. He's done this with his bare hands. You don't normally kill lions with your bare hands. And it's almost like he looks at this dead lion and wonders, well, how did that happen? And he keeps going. But this incident obviously preyed upon his mind. He thought about it. Because when he comes by this area again, he goes back to this lion to take another look at it. We find this in verses 8 and 9. We read there, "And after a time he returned to take her, and he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion. And behold, there was a swarm of bees and honey in the carcass of the lion. And he took thereof in his hand and went on eating, and came to his father and mother and gave them, and they did eat. But he told them not, he told not them that he had taken the honey out of the carcass of a lion." It's interesting, the first word for carcass here is a different word than the next two times carcass is found in verses 8 and 9. First word here, it means the word ruin. And Samson turned aside to see the ruin of this lion, to see what it was that ruined this lion, what it was that killed this lion, because he was a bit confused about what had happened. And he goes to this carcass, and he sees that it's full of bees. Remember back in Judges 13:25 with Zorah, and Samson's job was to sting the Philistines, and this lion was full of stings. But the carcass was also full of honey. God had promised to Israel a land flowing with milk and honey. Here in this vineyard is this dead Philistine lion and a lion that's full of honey. And if they could only stop these Philistines, they could have this land flowing with milk and honey. I think there was a lesson here for Samson, a lesson that for him to pick up and to understand that they need to be destroying these Philistines, not being entreated by them, to be stinging them. And that God wanted Samson to sting these Philistines. But I don't know if he really understood that lesson at this time. Because he takes this honey and he walks off munching on it, and gives to his father and his mother, and it seems he's more worried about the fact that he's supposed to be a Nazirite and he's just taken food from touched a dead animal and he wasn't supposed to touch a dead animal. I don't know if he understood the lesson that God had here for him at this time. He goes down to marry this girl. I think God was trying to stop him. And Samson didn't pick up on this lesson. But God, I think, did work with the situation and break up this relationship. I don't think it's coincidence that on the very last day of the feast, as he's marrying this girl, that his riddle is found out, and he finds out what these Philistines are like, and suddenly Samson's back on course again, and he's going out and he's stinging these Philistines just as God wanted him to be, and God's with him. I think God was working in his life and pushing situations so that Samson would move off the track that he was headed and back onto the track that God wanted him to head. And the end result of all of this incident is we have Samson stinging the Philistines. We read about this in chapter 15, and he catches 300 foxes and he lets them loose on the Philistines' fields. And he causes incredible devastation. Look at verse 5. And when he had set the brands on fire, he let them go into the standing corn of the Philistines and burn up both the shocks and also the standing corn and the vineyards and the olives. He burned up not only the fields, he burned up all the grain that had been collected from the harvest. He also burned up the vineyards, and vineyards take years to become productive, and suddenly that was all gone. And he burned up the olive trees, and olive trees can live for thousands of years, and suddenly they were all gone. And the Philistines were suddenly dealing with economic failure. Their harvest was gone. They were going to be in trouble this winter. There was complete economic devastation for the Philistines. And Samson was stinging the Philistines, and that's what God wanted him to do. And he fights with the Philistines, and he defeats them, and then he goes up into this rock, Etam. And this is in the hill country of Judah, and it makes a lot of sense to go up into the hill country. Because you see, Samson was one man, and he knew the Philistines were going to come after him. And if you're one person, you have to fight a lot of people. You don't want to stay in the plains, where they can surround you and attack you all at once. You want to find some place where you can see what's going on and pick the place of your battle, preferably some narrow spot where you only have to face one or two people. I think that's why Samson went into the hill country of Judah. And the Philistines come out against him. Look at verse 9. Then the Philistines went up and pitched in Judah and spread themselves in Lehi. We don't just have a few Philistines coming after Samson. Looks like we have the whole army of the Philistines coming to get one man. What Samson had done had obviously caught their attention, and they decided that this was it. They needed to do something. They couldn't live with this man stinging them like he was. So they come out. It's an army. And we have Judah's response. Judah, the lion of the tribe of Israel. Judah was one of the most powerful tribes in Israel. And we have 3,000 of their men coming to give Samson up to the Philistines. I think it's incredible. God had said that one man would chase 1,000 if they trusted in him. And here we have 3,000 men of Judah who just decided that this was a battle that they couldn't fight, that they couldn't win. And they wouldn't stand up to the Philistines. I think it's somewhat ironic that at the beginning of Samson's life, a promise was made, a promise that he would begin to deliver Israel out of the hands of the Philistines. And here we find Israel delivering Samson into the hands of the Philistines. You know, that would have to have hurt Samson. To be betrayed by the people you are trying to help, to be doing the work of God and to have the people who are supposed to be on your side, who are supposed to be helping you, say, we don't want to have any part in you or the work that you're doing. It's causing too many problems. It's too much of a hassle. It's inconveniencing us. It's making us look bad. Never mind that you're fighting God's battles. We don't want to have any part of you. You know, in another place, in another time, this happened to another man. And that man was Jesus. And the Jews who should have been on Jesus' side betrayed him. And the Jews who Jesus was trying to save turned him over to the Romans and said, you're causing too many problems for us. We don't want to have you around anymore. And you have Samson handed over to the Philistines by his brethren. But the Spirit of God came upon him once again, and we read in verse 15, and he found a new jawbone of an ass, and he put forth his hand, and he took it, and slew 1,000 men therewith. And Samson said, with the jawbone of an ass, heaps upon heaps, with the jaw of an ass, I have slain 1,000 men. If you look up that word new, or that new jawbone, my margin, it says, it has the word moist. In the reading that was read, it was the word fresh. If you look up the word, it means putrefying. It's only found one other place in the Bible. It's found in Isaiah, chapter 1. Guess what it describes in Isaiah? Guess what the analogy for putrefying is in Isaiah? If you look at Isaiah, chapter 1, and verse 3. The ox knoweth his owner, and the ass his master's crib, but Israel doth not know my people, doth not consider. A sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors, they have forsaken the Lord, they have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger, they are gone away backwards. Why should ye be stricken any more? Ye will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick, and the whole heart faint. From the sole of the foot even unto the head there is no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. They have not been closed, neither bound up, nor mollified with ointment. Your country is desolate, your cities are burned with fire, your land strangers devour it in your presence, and it is desolate, as overthrown by strangers. It's interesting, Israel is compared to a putrefying sore. The word putrefying is the same word as this moist or this new, this putrefying jawbone that Samson picks up and with which he wins a great victory against the Philistines. I think here we have also a classic case of Samson. Samson was a man who liked to play with words. He liked to spin words around. He was a poet. We have an example of this in verse 16 where he says, with the jawbone of an ass, heaps upon heaps, with the jaw of an ass, have I slain 1,000 men. And the word ass, the word heaps here and the word asses rhymes in Hebrew. And that's why other translations like the NIV pick this up and they say, with a donkey's jawbone I have made donkeys of them. With a donkey's jawbone I have killed 1,000 men. And this was Samson. He liked to play with words. He liked jokes. He liked riddles. He liked poems. But in this situation, he didn't have the right perspective. Notice the emphasis, I have slain 1,000 men. And he throws this jawbone away, and quick as a flash, God changes his perspective. And suddenly Samson finds himself dying of thirst. We read verse 18, and he was sore athirst, and called on the Lord, and said, thou hast given this great deliverance into the hand of thy servant, and now shall I die for thirst, and fall into the hand of the Philistines? But God clave an hollow place that was in the jaw, and there came water thereout. And when he had drunk, his spirit came again, and he revived. Wherefore he called the name thereof Enhakkor, which is in Lehi unto this day. And he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines 20 years. Do you notice the perspective change here? It started off with, I have slain 1,000 men, and it changes to, thou hast given this great deliverance into the hand of thy servant. You know, sometimes in the middle of our great victories, when things are going great, after a time of stress, God needs to nudge us and point out that the victory is not about us, and it was all about God, and we didn't win because of our strength. We won because of the strength of God. Sometimes we have the unfortunate habit of forgetting this in the middle of our victory. We have this funny little incident that closes this chapter where God clave a hollow place that was in the jaw and there came water thereout. Now the margin points out that the word jaw here is the word Lehi, which was the name of this place, and other translations pick this up. For instance, the NIV says, then God opened up the hollow place in Lehi, and water came out. But I don't think that is actually what was intended. I think what was intended was the jaw here, and that God really did open up a hollow place in this jaw. If you look up the word hollow here, Strong says that it's by analogy a socket of a tooth. Jesenius says it actually is a socket of a tooth. And I think God made water come up through this jawbone. And Samson had to go back up and pick this putrefying jawbone that he had thrown away, pick it up to get to the water. Well, why does this matter? Well, Samson had just been rejected by Judah. And we've seen the analogy between putrefying Israel and this putrefying jawbone. And Samson had thrown away this jawbone. He said he didn't need this jawbone anymore. And he could have done the same thing with Israel. He could have thrown Israel and said, look, you betrayed me to the Philistines. You don't have courage to stand up to them. I don't need you anymore. And he could have gone off his own way and lived his life out apart from Israel. Why would he want to be a part of a nation that couldn't stand up to the Philistines, that was willing to betray him to the Philistines? But I think God was telling him he couldn't do this, and that he had to go back, and he had to pick up this nation once again, and that if he didn't go back and pick up this jawbone, he would die of thirst. I think Samson got the message, because in the very next verse, verse 20, we're told, and he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines 20 years. I think Samson learned his lesson that although he'd been betrayed by Israel, he had to go back to them. He learned that it's God that gives salvation. It's God who was directing him in his life. God wanted him to associate with Israel, even if Israel was a putrefying nation, even if it was dead. And there's a lesson here for us as well, because you see, in our ecclesias, things don't always go as we might want them to go. Sometimes there are lots of problems and lots of difficulties, and we might be tempted to get away from all these problems, to run away, to go someplace else that isn't full of all these problems, where they'll treat us better, where we'll be respected. We may want to throw in the towel and leave. God's made it clear to us that we need to stick around, that we shouldn't abandon the problems that we face, that we should be a part of the solution to the problems. And although our brothers and sisters might have hurt us terribly and done things that they shouldn't have done and said things they shouldn't have said, that we should forgive them and we should move on and that we should work with them and to try and further the cause of the truth. We can't live the truth all by ourselves, and if we try to, we'll die of thirst, just as Samson would have died of thirst. I think Samson learned this lesson. Also notice he calls the place in Hakkor, or the spring of one calling. And all of us cry out to God in the middle of our weaknesses, in the middle of our sins, and we ask for forgiveness. And God has called us in the middle of all of this to a life of service to other people who are full of weaknesses and sins just like we are. God has called us to a life of helping each other. And if we look at the life of Jesus, what do we find that he was doing? What was he all about? He was all about helping people who were spotted with sin. He was all about helping people who were weak. He was all about picking up putrefying jawbones. And that's what we should be all about as well. I want to now move on to the end of Samson's life and his great fall. As we mentioned, Samson had a weakness. He had a weakness with his eyes. He had a weakness for a beautiful woman. And twice in his life, he falls and God bails him out of the situation and he escapes. But the third time, there was no escape. And his God left him. And he was taken by the Philistines and his eyes were poked out. And he was set to grind grain in the prison house of the Philistines. God will often give us an opportunity to deal with our own weaknesses and to overcome them. But if we don't, he will step in and he will force us to deal with them. And he will help us to remove the problem we have from our life. And that's what happened to Samson. God stepped in and he removed the problem. And Samson's eyes were poked out. He would never have an opportunity to look on another woman again. How much easier it would have been for Samson if he had only dealt with the problem himself, if he had only dealt with the problem earlier, if he had only learned his lesson the first time or the second time. He would have avoided so much pain and suffering, but he hadn't. And he found himself grinding grain in a prison house in the land of the Philistines. Instead of destroying the Philistines, he was helping to feed the Philistines. And he had a lot of time to think over his failures, a lot of time to think about his missed opportunities of what might have been. And it seems to be a really sad end to his life. And he finds himself taken into the temple of Dagon to make sport for the Philistines. And here he is alone in this arena with none of his family around him. And his God has departed from him. Samson calls out to his God, knowing that his God has left him. I think it's really neat if we look in Judges 16 and verse 28. It says there, "And Samson called unto the Lord and said, O Lord God, remember me, I pray thee, and strengthen me, I pray thee, only this once, O God, that I may be at once avenged of the Philistines for my two eyes." I think it's neat. Samson starts using different names and titles of God. He has a different spiritual perspective here. He starts off and he calls to Yahweh. And then he says, Adonai Yahweh, the Lord God. And he was surrounded here by the lords of the Philistines. And he calls upon the real God, the God who is Lord of everything. And he calls upon this Lord God to look down on this situation. Look down on these people who are praising their God. And he prays for strength. He says, I pray thee only this once, O God. And the word God here is the word Elohim. It's the word mighty ones. And Samson is asking for God to once again show his mighty power to these Philistines. This isn't going to be Samson's strength. This is going to be God's strength. He says that I may at once be avenged of the Philistines for my two eyes. It's interesting. If you look in the RSV, they actually change this around a little bit. The RSV reads like this, I pray thee only this once, O God, that I may be avenged upon the Philistines for one of my two eyes. I don't know quite how to tell which translation is right, but I sort of like the RSV. Because you see, Samson wasn't asking to be avenged for both his eyes, just for one. He realized that he was in this circumstance because of his own actions. He deserved to be there. He deserved to be blind. And he wanted God to stand up one last time for him. And Samson took hold of the pillars and he said, let me die with the Philistines. In my margin, for let me die, points out, it says, my soul. It's the word nephesh here. And Samson's saying, let my soul die with the Philistines. Samson looked at his life and said, I'm a Philistine. I'm a sinner. I deserve to die with the uncircumcised. I don't deserve to be saved. Samson wasn't asking to be saved. He was simply asking for the name of God to be upheld, for God to be glorified. It wasn't about Samson anymore. It was all about God. He wanted the Philistines to know once and for all that there was a God in Israel, and this God was a true God and a powerful God. And Samson died there with the Philistines, surrounded with the dead bodies of these uncircumcised Philistines. I think he died believing that he didn't deserve to be saved, and he wasn't worth salvation. But God didn't leave him there. Look at verse 31. Then his brethren and all the house of his father came down and took him and brought him up and buried him between Zorah and Eshtahol in the burying place of Manoah his father, and he judged Israel 20 years. His family, his brothers, took him, took his dead body from among all these uncircumcised Philistines and brought him back home. And they buried him where it all started, between Zorah and Eshtahol, in the burying place of his father Manoah. And Manoah means rest. And in death, Samson finally found rest. And one day, Samson will rise from the dead, and he will find out, I think to his surprise, that he was listed among the faithful in the Old Testament. He'll look at his life and you will see that God's strength was made perfect in weakness. When Samson was weak, then God would work with him and make him strong. And Samson will be in the kingdom because he finally got to this point. And it's a point that we all need to get to because we all want to be in the kingdom with Samson.